Each country decides for themselves how to deal with the question of getting enough men and women into the military. But I'm very happy to hear that the coalition here in Germany has now agreed, as I understand it, on a way forward. And that is very important, that there is a political agreement, political Einigung, and I think you have achieved it now in the Berlin coalition. So it's up to each nation how to deal with this, but obviously, as NATO Secretary General, I'm always happy when decisions are taken to get more people involved in our military.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, November the 14th, coming to you from Larnaca, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And we have a report from CNN, which claims that the President of the United States was once again briefed on his options to strike Venezuela, his military options. He was presented military options with regards to Venezuela about 3-4 weeks ago. At that time, the USS Ford was not in the Caribbean. It was in the Middle East, I believe, and it was going to be making its way to the region. But according to a report from the New York Times, Trump was briefed on his various options to hit Venezuela. And then Trump started to get cold feet and he started to have doubts about the success of an operation against Maduro. And now that the USS Ford is in the Caribbean, Trump was once again briefed on what his various options are, his military options, to go after Maduro and to get some kind of a regime change. According to CNN, their sources familiar with the matter, Trump has not made a decision as to whether he will green light a military operation into Venezuela. The Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, he has designated a name to what could be a military operation in Venezuela. He is calling it Operation Southern Spear, and he announced this on X. Pete Hegseth said, "President Trump ordered action, and the Department of War is delivering. Today, I am announcing Operation Southern Spear, led by Joint Task Force Southern Spear and Southcom. The mission defends our homeland, removes narco-terrorists from our hemisphere, and secures our homeland from the drugs that are killing our people. The Western Hemisphere is America's neighborhood, and we will protect it. The Western Hemisphere is America's neighborhood, and we will protect it. We will protect the Western Hemisphere from Maduro and from the narco-terrorists. We will attack Venezuela in order to protect our neighborhood, the Western Hemisphere," according to the Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth. Operation Southern Spear is what they are calling this possible, probable military operation against Venezuela, regime change operation against Maduro. They should probably call this operation how to lose the midterms. That's what they should call this operation. Operation how to lose the midterm elections with a regime change operation against Venezuela that very few American citizens asked for, voted for, or want. But anyway, that is the situation in Venezuela. Actually, Maduro, he was at a rally in Caracas, surrounded by very large, rowdy, excited crowd of his supporters were around Maduro at this rally in Caracas. And somehow CNN was able to actually approach Maduro, who was in the middle of this crowd, and they asked him a couple of quick questions. what he thinks about this U.S. military buildup, and what he would tell U.S. President Donald Trump, or what message does he have from U.S. President Trump. I think I can cross. And so Maduro's message addressed to the people of the United States, of all people in the Western Hemisphere that Pete Hegseth is tasked with protecting, Maduro's message was for everyone to unite for peace. This is a direct quote of the Americas. No more endless wars, no more unjust wars, no more Libya, no more Afghanistan. And answering the question about what he would tell Trump, what message does he have for Trump? Maduro said in English, yes, peace, yes, peace. That's his message to Trump, peace. So I hope Trump is listening. Even if Trump is listening, I doubt that he will take Maduro's words into consideration. Yes, peace. Yes, peace. That's Maduro's message to Trump. So in Ukraine, we are getting reports that Russia launched a Zircon hypersonic cruise missile from Crimea into the Sumy region. This would be the third time that Russia has used a Zircon hypersonic missile. And the last time it fired a Zircon into Ukraine, it launched a Zircon into Ukraine. It also targeted the Sumy region. The Russian Ministry of Defense has reported on big Russian missile strikes into Ukraine, but they have not mentioned a hypersonic Zircon missile being used. According to various mapping channels, including pro-Ukrainian mapping channels, the Zircon launched from Crimea into Sumy targeted various military infrastructure and facilities. And we are also getting reports, once again, from pro-Ukrainian mapping channels that the Russian military is advancing in the Zaporozhye region, and they are advancing towards Guliapole. Guliapole is the name. Guliapole, is that connected to the Russian word Gulyats, to walk? I think it is. Guliapole. Russia is advancing in this region now, and they have effectively cut off the roads into Guliapole, except for one paved highway. So they're almost to the point where Guliapole is going to be in some sort of an encirclement or some sort of fire control encirclement or cauldron. And according to pro-Ukrainian mapping channels, there is only one usable paved road left into Guliapole, which is less than 6 kilometers from the front line, meaning it is under constant Russian drone surveillance. So the situation in Guliapole is going from bad to worse for the Zelensky regime. You have Kupiansk in the north. You have Liman, Seversk. Pokrovsk is lost for Ukraine, captured by Russia. That one's done. Mirnograd, which is part of Pokrovsk, next to Pokrovsk. Obviously, that is also now captured by Russia. And then as you move further down, you have now the Zaporozhye front collapsing and Russia advancing towards Guliapole. But I am certain that Zelensky will reach out to Keith Kellogg, and the Green Goblin will tell Keith Kellogg, Trump's trusted Ukraine envoy and Ukraine advisor, the person whom Trump has based much of his Ukraine foreign policy on,
I am sure that Alensky is going to tell Keith Kellogg not to worry. Everything is under control. Keith, Mr. Kellogg, everything under control. There are only 15 Russian soldiers in Guliapole, Zaporozhye. Do not worry. Only 15 Russian soldiers. Everything is under control. Mr. Kellogg, you give this message to my good friend, Mr. President Donald Trump. Thank you, Mr. Kellogg. That's going to be the message from Alensky to Kellogg, and that's going to be the message that Kellogg delivers to U.S. President Trump. By the way, Alensky, he made a trip to Zaporozhye, and he took a video in front of the Zaporozhye sign. And you know what that means. Alensky taking a video, shooting a TikTok, Instagram video in front of a city's sign. That pretty much seals the deal for Zaporozhye. It will be captured by Russia sooner or later. But Alensky and Yermak, in order to escape from the 100 million Energoatom scandal in Kiev, they decided to do a PR trip to Zaporozhye, and they took photos and videos with Ukraine military and Ukraine command and soldiers. Alensky filmed his TikTok video so that they can present the picture of being in charge and on top of the military situation. Everything is under control on the front, and don't pay attention to the 100 million energy scandal that is unfolding in Kiev. And Alensky, not concerned, or pretending to not be concerned, with the $100 million, which is peanuts for the Green Goblin, energy scandal. Podolyak, $100 million scandal. What is this? $100 million do not even buy me a mansion which I can use, Podolyak. Maybe 20 rooms, $100 million. This is nothing for me, Podolyak. What they say, energy scandal. But Alensky, forget about the $100 million energy corruption scandal, which the Europeans are calling unfortunate. Kaya Kallas is calling this incident very unfortunate, stunning, and brave. But he is pressing for $140 billion. That is what Alensky is concerned with. Forget about $100 million. $100 million. I don't get up out of bed for $100 million. Come on now. Let's talk about the $140 billion in Russian frozen assets. No, wait. Wait. Alensky is saying maybe $160 billion in Russian frozen assets. Come on, Belgium. $140 billion. Just make it $160 billion. Give us $160 billion and we're even Steven, right? We're all good. So Alensky posts on X about frozen Russian assets. This is a very important question. For the Russians, it will be a big, big loss if we can get this money in any way, be it a loan insured by other countries or another way. But if we can have these 140 to 160 billion, this will be a big loss for Putin and his circle of people. You know that it's their money, and that's why for them, it's really destabilizing the system, their clique. So I think this is very important. That's right. It's Putin's money, 140, not 140, yeah, 140. 160 billion, eh, Podolyak? Eh, Mr. President, why not make it 180 billion? You know what, Podolyak? I like the way you think. Yeah, 140 to 160 billion in Russian frozen assets. It should be given to Ukraine. This would be a big, big loss for Putin and his clique. Forget about the 100 million energy scandal connected to my buddies, Mr. Minchik. And my buddies, Minchuk, whatever his name is, forget about that. Let's talk about the 140 to 160 billion, which is part of Putin's clique. Take that money, Belgium, and give it to me. That would be a big, big loss for Putin. The Green Goblin, everybody. The Green Goblin. So, what does Medvedev have to say about the energy scandal, what Naboo called Operation Midas. Operation Midas. What does Medvedev have to say about this? Well, Medvedev put out two posts, one on X, a very short post on X, and a longer post on Telegram. I will read you some of what he posted on Telegram, and I will read you all of what he posted on X. Medvedev posted on X, "Today we observe World Kindness Day. Kind people, help the poor citizens of Ukraine. Zelensky, Yermak, Mindich, and others who are starving. Don't be stingy, Europeans. The show must go on." And you can see a photo of Zelensky and Mindich side by side. The Zelensky photo is a bit weird, isn't it? It looks like something's happened to Zelensky's cheeks. They look distorted. But anyway, that's the photo that Medvedev decided to go with. And then he posted on Telegram, "Zug Wang for the Banderite scum. As expected, the green knit has landed himself in a classic Zug Wang. With every passing day, his position on the chessboard only gets worse. The encirclement of his troops threatens to send the whole front line crashing down. And from there, who knows, maybe more territorial losses to follow. The energy grid is collapsing under Russian strikes. Electricity is still on, but with constant blackouts, and the heating situation is dire. Then there is the corruption case involving Zelensky's overstuffed purse named Mindich, who has gone rabid with impunity." Yeah, Mindich is Audi 5000. Somehow Mindich managed to easily escape from Ukraine, tipped off about the Naboo raids, and he made his way to Israel, according to Naboo officials. But Mindich, according to Ukraine media, is known as Zelensky's wallet. That is how Ukraine media describes Timur Mindich, the man at the center of Energoatom's energy scandal. A scandal of $100 million, but also a scandal connected to the energy grid, which is undergoing constant blackouts. So that is why you have Ukrainian citizens very upset about this scandal. Anyway, Medvedev then goes on to give his take as to who is behind this Naboo investigation. Is it Kolomoisky, he says, trying to get revenge on Zelensky? Maybe, possible, Medvedev says, but probably not. Is it the Europeans who have put Naboo up to this investigation of Zelensky and his inner circle? Probably not, Medvedev says, because for the Europeans, this is very unfortunate for them because they built up the Green Goblin to be the protector of values and democracy and all of these things and human rights. And what is happening now in Ukraine, according to Medvedev, for the Europeans is very embarrassing, and they describe it as very unfortunate, this corruption scandal. So who does Medvedev say is behind this Naboo investigation of Energoatom and of Zelensky's inner circle? His theory is that all roads point to Washington, D.C. There's only one power that can decide whether to execute or pardon its bastards, and that is Washington, D.C. That's where the chill wind is blowing from. So basically, Medvedev is saying that there are forces in D.C. that want Zelensky out. And they're the ones that have put Naboo up to this this investigation, that have empowered Naboo to go after Zelensky's entertainment buddy, his entertainment circle, and also go after, possibly go after, his one-time defense minister. We are getting reports that Umerov may not return to Kiev. His one-time defense minister, his current, I believe, head of his security council, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about Umerov's current position, but a definite Zelensky insider a definite pal of Alensky, very much like Mindich. He doesn't go as far back with Alensky as Mindich does. After all, Mindich, according to Politico, actually introduced Alensky to Kolomoisky. That's how far back they go. But Umerov is in Turkey, or was in Turkey, negotiating a prisoner exchange. And now reports have Umerov in Qatar. And there are some analysts in Ukraine who believe that Umerov, because he may get tangled up in this Naboo investigation, will not return to Kiev. We will see. Maybe he will return to Kiev. Maybe by the time I publish this video, Umerov will be back in Ukraine. But there are some analysts who believe that he is going to stay in Qatar and try to figure out a way to leave the sinking ship. That is the latest update on Umerov. That is the post from Medvedev. He believes that there are forces in DC that are behind this palace intrigue. And let's move on to an interview that Lavrov gave to the Italian publication Corriere della Sera, which was going to be published by Corriere della Sera, but they decided after the interview to not publish this interview of the Russian foreign minister, because they claim that what Lavrov said in this interview was too provocative to publish. But the Kremlin decided to publish this interview of Lavrov. And Lavrov, he said some interesting things in this interview. He revealed some interesting information. He talked about the Alaska summit and the Budapest summit. And he gave his timeline of how events unfolded. Lavrov said that a week before Alaska, Witkoff traveled to Moscow. He presented a plan to Russia, which was Witkoff's proposal, but very similar to root causes June 2024. Putin told Witkoff, "We can work with this." And they organized the summit in Alaska. Trump was happy with the summit in Alaska. Everything was very positive. And the understanding was that Trump would speak with U.S. allies, the Europeans, which he did speak with the Europeans. He met with the Europeans the next day. And that the United States would provide feedback, would provide a response to Russia's positive response to Witkoff's proposal. So Witkoff puts a proposal on the table, which is similar to Istanbul Plus. Putin gives a positive response. Trump is positive about it in Alaska. And the next step was that the United States was going to give their feedback to Russia's positive response to Witkoff's proposal. You got to remember, this is all on the initiative of Witkoff and the Trump White House. Right. And Lavrov said that Russia never got the feedback from the U.S. They never got the U.S.'s proposal to their positive response for negotiations for the proposal that Witkoff put on the table. And this runs counter to all of the media reports which claim that Putin doesn't want to negotiate, right? That Putin is the one who doesn't want to negotiate. The fact is, according to Lavrov, that the Russians were waiting. They still are waiting, but they were waiting all this time for the U.S.'s feedback to Russia's positive response to Witkoff's proposal. And it got to the point, according to Lavrov, and this is an interesting revelation, it got to the point where Russia actually sent a document, a non-paper, to Washington to remind them that they're positive on Witkoff's proposal and they're waiting for the U.S.'s feedback to their positive response. And they actually have a document sent to the Trump White House, which shows that Russia was positive to the proposal and ready to negotiate further based on Witkoff's proposal, which was similar to root causes June 2024. So this document completely debunks the mainstream media narrative and the White House's narrative,
which is, and Trump's narrative, which is that Russia is not ready for negotiations, and Russia is the side that is not ready to negotiate. So there's a document in the possession of the Trump White House, according to Lavrov, which says otherwise, which says we are positive to Witkoff's proposal and we're waiting for you guys. So that was an interesting revelation from Lavrov. Lavrov also says that the call between Trump and Putin that happened the day before Alensky arrived in D.C., his last trip to D.C., was on the initiative of Trump. So that call happened under the initiative of Trump. So Lavrov revealed that bit of information. And then Lavrov was asked about casualties. And he was asked by Corriere della Sera, and let me find the quote here, why Russia does not post its casualties. That was the question to Lavrov. And Lavrov's answer was, it is not customary to publicize battlefield losses. I can only say that this year, Russia has transferred over 9,000 bodies of Ukrainian personnel in repatriation. We have received 143 bodies of our fighters from Ukraine. You can come to your own conclusions. 9,000 to 143. That was Lavrov's response to the Italian reporter. You can come to your own conclusions. Lavrov, everybody, the goat of foreign ministers, the goat. 9,000 to 143. Over 9,000, according to Lavrov, to 143. He shut down the Corriere della Sera reporter slash propagandist. Anyway, that was the interview that was between Lavrov and the Italian publication that has been published by the Kremlin and was not published by Corriere della Sera because they thought it too provocative. Not provocative, maybe too honest, maybe too revealing. Maybe it debunks all of the propaganda and media lies coming from the collective West over the past couple of months. So the Green Goblin is going to be traveling to Greece on Sunday. This is an official state visit. And the reason for Alensky going to Greece is he is looking for two Patriot battery systems. He wants Greece to hand over two Patriot battery systems as well as Mirage fighter jets. The Mirage fighter jets have been promised. Maybe not promised, but the Greek government has said that they will give over the Mirage fighter jets to the Ukraine military once they receive Rafale fighter jets from France. So when they get the fighter jets from France, the new Rafale fighter jets from France, then they will give over the Mirage fighter jets to Ukraine. This was negotiated or talked about many months ago, or about a year ago. I'm not sure exactly when, but this was already agreed upon. So Alensky's coming to talk about that. He really wants those Mirage fighter jets, but more importantly, he is desperate to get the two Patriot battery systems from the Greek military. The Greek military has so far refused, rightly so. They need these air defense systems. And I do know people in the Greek military who do not, absolutely do not, want to give their Patriot systems to the Green Goblin. They're very much against Mitsotakis handing over the Patriots to Ukraine. Very much against it, as I believe the Greek citizens, for the most part, would be very much opposed to Mitsotakis agreeing to give over Greece's air defense systems to Ukraine. But Mitsotakis, he is a child of the collective West. He is a pupil of the globalist school, very close to the US, very close to the globalists and to Ursula.
There are photos of them holidaying together. Mitsotakis, the Prime Minister of Greece, and Ursula von der Pirates, so they're very, very close. And he met with the ambassador of the United States to Greece on November the 5th. They had a meeting. The ambassador to Greece is none other than Kimberly Guilfoyle. She is Trump's ambassador to Greece, to Athens. Kimberly Guilfoyle, I believe she was married to Gavin Newsom. That might not be correct, but I do believe she was married to Gavin Newsom. And then she was a prosecutor in San Francisco, in California. And then she became a TV host on Fox News, and she was one of the main hosts on the popular show The Five with Greg Gutfeld, and Kimberly Guilfoyle was on that show. Judge Jeanine Pirro. So she was on that panel. And then I think she started to date Trump Jr. as well. I think she was dating Trump Jr. for a while, and Trump then appointed her ambassador to Greece. And she arrived in Greece just a couple of months ago, and she met with Mitsotakis a couple of weeks ago. And I imagine her meeting with Mitsotakis was very much to pressure and demand that Greece hand over those Patriot systems to Ukraine. You see, the United States, they're the neutral mediator in all of this. They're the neutral negotiator. Trump just wants peace in Ukraine. But I imagine that the meeting with Mitsotakis was very much, let's get weapons to the Zelensky regime. So Greece, you have weapons, hand them over to Zelensky. I imagine that's what the meeting was about. So we'll see what happens on Sunday. Sunday is the official state visit of the Green Goblin to Greece, to Ellada. I don't think I will be in Greece at that time to maybe hang out with Zelensky. It would have been good if I was in Athens. Maybe I could have hung out with Zelensky and Podolyak. Hey, Podolyak. Hey, Podolyak. Anyway, Podolyak, since we're talking about Podolyak, he posted on X about the Energoatom scandal, and he is blaming it all on Russia. Podolyak is blaming it on Russia. This is what he posted on X. The news about an investigation into a corruption scheme in the energy sector is unfortunately not surprising. It is a logical echo of the past, in which the Kremlin spent decades building a system to keep Ukraine within its sphere of influence. Corruption was one of its main instruments, and remnants of that mechanism still exist. However, today's situation is fundamentally different in nature. That's right. It is Putin's fault. It is Russia's fault. It's a remnant of Russia, of the Kremlin, Ukraine's corruption. It's just a remnant of the Russian Kremlin past for Ukraine. That's Podolyak doing a whole lot of spin doctoring, doing a whole lot of coping and a whole lot of spin doctoring. It doesn't work. It's not going to work. and the comments underneath this post show that no one believed Podolyak's spin doctoring, his claim that the corruption scandal is really just the fault of Russia. That's why we have these corruption scandals, all because of Russia. Austrian Airways arriving to Larnaca. Yeah, a lot of the comments underneath this post on X asked Podolyak, well, then why did Zelensky, if you guys are trying to tackle corruption and this is Russia's fault, why did Zelensky go to close down Nabu a couple of months ago? If you guys are serious about corruption, why then would Zelensky try to shut down Nabu? So yeah, a lot of the comments underneath this post on X were not buying the spinning that Podolyak was coming up with. So in Germany, it looks like
young German men will be going into the military. Germany will require all men to sign up for potential military service from the 1st of January 2026. NATO CEO Mark Rutte, he's very happy about this development, very happy that young German men will be going into the military, whether they like it or not, so that in 3-4 years, NATO can get their conflict with Russia by sending the German men to fight Russia. That is CEO Mark Rutte's plan, the globalist plan, build up Germany, build up the German military, so that in 3-4 years, they're able to go to conflict with Russia. Rutte said, as NATO Secretary General, I am glad. That's how Rutte reacted to the reform of conscription in Germany. The Bundeswehr will summon all men aged 18 for a medical military commission. If there are not enough volunteers, those deemed necessary will be drafted into the army. In Finland, the defense minister, after a NATO meeting of defense ministers, he lashed out at China, and he is blaming China for Russia's winning in Ukraine. He actually said that if it wasn't for China and all of China's support, he mentioned India as well. He said India is also supporting Russia in different ways, but mainly China, he said. If it wasn't for all of the Chinese support, Russia would have lost this conflict a long time ago. Russia would not be able to sustain itself. The Finnish minister said that China is massively financing Russia's war chest, alleging that it supplies military components and participates in joint military exercises and other large-scale activities in the Arctic, Indo-Pacific, and beyond. The Finnish minister added that Russia would be unable to sustain itself for long without such support, saying that India, of course, provides funding in other ways, but China is doing so quite deliberately. So India is supporting Russia in other ways, with the Russian oil and the shadow fleet. But it's really China that is keeping Russia afloat. Well, Mr. Defense Minister of Finland, what's your name? Mr. Hakkinen, two can play at that game. If it wasn't for the support of the United States and the UK and Germany and France and Canada and Australia and all of the European Union, with the exception of Hungary and Slovakia, and the support from the IMF and the support from the United Nations and the OECD and the World Bank, if it wasn't for the support of all of these countries and institutions, well, then Ukraine would not be able to sustain itself. I too can play at that game, Mr. Defense Minister of Finland. So let's do some clown worlds and we can wrap up this video. And in today's first clown world, we are getting reports that the BBC has sent a letter of apology to Trump. And we are getting reports that Trump is rejecting this apology letter from the BBC. A BBC spokesperson said Thursday night that the network's chair, Samir Shah, had sent a personal letter to the White House making clear to President Trump that he and the corporation are sorry and promise not to rebroadcast the documentary on any platforms. While the BBC sincerely regrets the manner in which the video clip was edited, we strongly disagree there is a basis for a defamation claim, the spokesperson said. So they're sorry, they're not going to rebroadcast the panorama doctored video of Trump at the January 6th Capitol. But please do not sue us. Please do not sue us for $1 billion. I think Trump should proceed with the defamation lawsuit. And the BBC is getting off very easily with just a lawsuit. What Trump should really do is sanction the BBC. That is what he should really do. So they're getting off quite easily with just $1 billion defamation lawsuit. So the word is that Trump has rejected this apology letter from the BBC. Let's wait and see what Trump does. The Ukraine media is reporting that they are able to shoot down Kinjal missiles with a song, by playing a Bandera song. On top of that, it's a Bandera song. By playing a Bandera song, they're able to knock down Russian Kinjal missiles. Ukraine's EW system beats back Russia's Kinjal missiles, playing Our Father is Bandera through the static. So this is a pretty embarrassing piece of propaganda from the Ukraine media. Not only is it ridiculous for them to claim that a song is able to knock down a Kinzhal missile, but on top of that, they say it's a song from Bandera. It's like a double embarrassing, double clown world embarrassing from Ukraine media. Yeah, a Bandera song can knock down a Russian missile. Okay, yeah, we believe you. We believe you, Ukraine media. We absolutely believe you. Yep, just like the grandmother that was taking out drones with jars of spaghetti sauce. And what was the other story? The pensioner who was shooting down fighter jets with his rifle, right? He was shooting down Sukhois with his rifle. Yeah, we believe it. We believe that this song is able to knock down Kinzhal missiles. If all that is needed is a song, then why do you have to ask for patriots, right? Just play the songs on loudspeakers day and night. Whenever there's missiles, just play the songs. Why do you need patriot systems? Why do you need any weapons? Just play this Bandera song and there you go, if that is indeed the case. And finally, a final clown world, which I did not report on, which happened a couple of days ago, actually connected to Al-Jilani, Al-Sharaa, Bizarro, Alensky's trip to the White House meeting with U.S. President Trump. Video has surfaced of U.S. President Trump showcasing his cologne, his perfume, to Bizarro Alensky, Al-Jilani, Al-Sharaa, in his suit and tie. Yeah, there is video. I'll play the video right now of Trump spraying some of his cologne, which I believe is called Victory or 45 or 47. He may actually have two or three brands of cologne, unlike Alensky. Alensky just has Alensky number 5. Trump has Victory, 45, 47. I don't know which one this was, but there he is with ISIS, Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra, head chopper, Al-Jilani, giving him some cologne, spraying some cologne on him. Embarrassing. Very, very embarrassing. Been a very, very bad couple of months for U.S. President Trump. Very bad indeed. And this video is not a good look. Not a good look at all. But there it is. We are living in a clown world. So that is the end of my video. I forgot to say like, subscribe, share. Like, subscribe, share to this channel, everybody. And you can find me on Twitter, on X, Twitter X, Rumble, and Telegram. I will see everyone tomorrow. What was that? I don't know. A loud boom. Anyway, I will see everyone tomorrow. Take care.